to The Happy Writer. This is a podcast that aims to bring readers more books to enjoy and to help authors find more joy in their writing. I'm your host, Marissa Meyer. Thank you so much for joining me. There are a bunch of things making me happy this week, so it was really hard for me to narrow it down. But I'm going to go with the number one thing making me happy is that we finally got our house painted. We have been meaning to get our house painted for years. It's been this like really bland kind of tan color. I was so bored and tired of this boring brown. And so we finally got it painted and now it is a beautiful dark blue and I have a bright, happy red door and it makes me smile so big every time I come home. So that is making me very happy among other things. Also, a little bit of housekeeping. We are in the midst of another contest happening on Instagram. This month's theme is book spine poetry, and I have seen some of your entries so far. You guys are so clever. I haven't done one yet, but I'm definitely going to be perusing my bookshelf and trying to come up with something, I don't know, clever, profound, poetic, something. We'll see what I can come up with. But they're really great. It's a fun little activity. I might even get the girls to try to do one. We'll see. That is ending September 30th. You can enter by posting your book spine poetry and tagging us. That is Instagram at Happy Writer Podcast. And you will be entered to win a free book. Okay, cool. And of course, I am so happy to be talking to today's guest. She is the author of the Last Star Burning trilogy and the founder and co-host of the Lit Service podcast. She has two new books coming out in the near future. Her middle grade debut, A Baker's Guide to Robber Pie, will be out early 2022. And her new YA fantasy, She Who Rides the Storm, comes out this week on September 21st. Please welcome Caitlin Sangster.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. I'm very excited to talk to you today. Congratulations on your new book coming out.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited.
So we like to start off with our conversations on this podcast by asking about your author origin story. So I want to know whether that's how did you know you wanted to be a writer? How did you get your first book published? Or whatever your story is, what is your origin?
Well, I did not seriously start writing until I had two kids at home.
You're like, I need something more to do with my time? Or
well, I just needed like a creative outlet that wasn't cleaning noodles up off the floor, I guess. I've always loved reading. I've always been like under a pile of books or hiding under a desk somewhere with a book rather than talking to people. That's probably not a great way to introduce myself, but there you go. I never really thought of books as being written by people because I had never written anything that was that perfect before. I couldn't imagine somebody being able to fit all of that inside their heads. And so I just kind of thought that maybe like book fairies put them on shelves or something. I didn't ever think of it as something that I could do. And, my sister actually got a book deal. She'd been trying to write books for years and years and years. And I was always kind of like, you know, it's the book fairies that write those. You're not going to be able to get a publishing deal. But then she did. And I was like, oh, this is something I could do. And I've always loved writing. Like I'd always sit and write little things to myself or like I'd be working and I'd be like, I see something really pretty outside and I'd write a description about it. So I've always loved writing, but I never really applied myself and tried to write a whole book until after that. And I just ran with it. I loved it so much. I informed my husband that I was not going to be home for several hours every evening, that he could take care of the noodles on the floor and that I was going to go to the library and I was going to write a book. And it took probably about a year to get that first book finished. And then it took probably another year to get an agent and then another year after that to get a book deal. But and I feel like there was a lot of running very long distances in between all of those touch points that I just mentioned to deal with the stress of like not quite being able to be successful all at once. Cause I feel like I'm a very like competitive, I just want things to be done right now, impatient sort of a person. So when it took a while to like become good at writing, and it took a while for other people to actually want to read my books, it was hard. But I loved like every second of being able to go through that process. And then finally being able to hold a book in my hands that I'd written was just fabulous.
That's kind of, it sounds like a fairly fast process for you though.
It was. I realize now how lucky I was. At the time I was like, this is taking forever. But now I know that I lucked out getting to publish my first book. So yeah.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean though. Cause I was the same, except I'd been writing kind of my whole life. And since I was a kid, knew that I wanted to be a writer. But I just felt like as I was going through high school and college and trying to write my first book and dreaming about getting published, it did feel like it took forever. And then like it only in hindsight do you look back and you're like, yeah, it really didn't take that long.
I didn't have to write 13 books before someone picked it up.
Right. So and of people. Course, yeah. So many people do. Like that is not an unheard of story at all.
No.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I also, I love this idea of you having two kids and just thinking, let's start a new hobby. It's like very much the opposite. I feel so many people have outlets and have creative pursuits and then start a family and like forget to leave time for themselves. So kudos to you for that. And kudos to your husband for supporting you in that.
Yeah, he's great. I couldn't do it without him.
Yeah, mine is too. Yeah, I'm super lucky. What was it like? I mean, because I know for me, having two small kids at home, I try not to feel guilty when they're asking me like, hey, mom, come play this game with me. And I'm like, I can't. I got to get some work done. But it's impossible to not feel a little bit of guilt at that. How do you deal with that?
I mean, like not well.
Okay. It's not just me then.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think people with small children, like anybody who has kids probably deals with a little bit of, I would like some time to myself guilt because kids, if you let them, will take every moment of your time, including when you're supposed to be asleep. And they, because I started when I already had children, I feel like I have it easier than some people because people who are used to having set working hours or who have like an amount of time during the day they can rely on to just work, I never had that. Mm-hmm. And so I've been, I think that it helped me to actually be able to allot my time in a way that made me feel like if I get all of these things done, and if I spend all this time with my children and we play these games and we do this, then when I get to this point, I'm okay if I take an hour for myself to write this book. And then as soon as it became something where I had deadlines, and I mean, that adds a certain level of stress to anything. It became a job where I was like, no, I have to do this, which I guess creates more guilt because I'm like, I should be picking the noodles up off the floor right now, but no, I'm going to finish this chapter. So, I mean, I don't know exactly how to deal with the guilt part of it, because I feel like that will always be there. That's just part of being a parent. You will always have like that conflict of what should I be doing versus what can I do that you have to kind of balance. Because I mean, there's a huge difference between what should I be doing, like that perfect, beautiful, this is what real parents are like versus what you're actually capable of yourself based on what you have on your plate. And how your children are acting and what they need and what they don't need. I'm homeschooling my kids right now. And that has definitely changed the dynamic of when I'm working and when I'm not working. And I believe you're homeschooling as well, aren't you?
I am. And I'm already feeling like we could just spend the next hour talking about this.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Absolutely.
What grade are your kids in?
Well, I have four kids. Mm-hmm. My oldest is in sixth, and then I have one in fourth, one in second, and one in kindergarten.
Oh, so. My goodness. And you're homeschooling all four of them?
Yes.
Well, yes, there you go, folks. Good being done. How's your first week going?
Well, actually, I live in Indiana, and we started about a month ago. So it's been fun. I mean, one thing I really love about homeschooling is that your kids get to do all of the fun stuff while also learning. And so you're like, let's go to the beach and talk about geology and have a fun day at the beach and also talk about geology. And you get to spend all that time with your kids instead of them being gone at school. I mean, but on the flip side, that's like, you know, 6 hours I could have been writing a book. So I don't know.
No, it's so true. And I'm the same way. And we just finished our first week of first grade. And awesome. I love it. I absolutely love doing the homeschooling thing. I think it is so much fun. I love planning like the crafts and the science projects mm-hmm. and like how fun ways to incorporate writing and fun ways to incorporate math. And I just get such a kick out of it. And also feel like this is really great quality time that we are spending yeah. together. Mm-hmm. At the same time, like you say, you've made the choice to not ship them off for hours at a time that you could be using to be really productive. So it is true. A trade-off.
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely yes. But we've got this, right?
I feel like there was never a more appropriate moment for that Hunger Games salute. it's an interesting solidarity. Lifestyle choice. But yeah, it's interesting, but awesome.
But yeah. Awesome. Have you been homeschooling your kids the whole time, or is it new as of COVID?
It's new as of COVID. Okay. I think my two older kids, we could really talk about homeschooling this whole time.
I'll try not to let it devolve and take up the entire episode.
That's okay. My two older kids really struggle with anxiety. And so I've always kind of had it in the back of my mind that if things got really difficult, that they could come home. And then COVID happened. And I was like, I guess we're coming home. So
there you go. Yeah. Yeah. I'll be fascinated to see statistics because I do think that being forced into it has kind of made a lot of people like our family feel like, oh, hey, this is an option that we never really seriously considered. And turns out it mm-hmm. feels really right for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any tips for someone who's homeschooling and also trying to make a writing career? What would you tell someone?
Learn not to sleep. I don't know.
It is time consuming. It is definitely time consuming.
Yeah.
Yeah. But fun. I don't know. This early, like, you know, the first week went awesome. I've totally got this. But I also know from last year, like every week is not going to go awesome. So I'm like trying to harbor like all of the good, joyous feelings right now to buffer me against the bad days because they're going to be coming.
You have to store them up. I feel like whenever you teach somebody something, and this is true probably of anybody, not just children, even though children are much more bullheaded about it and are not afraid to tell you when they're done. Yes. I feel like anytime you teach somebody something new, it usually takes a while and it's really frustrating for that first while, but then watching somebody actually learn it is such a rewarding experience.
Yeah.
It like makes up for it usually.
Right. No, it is really rewarding. Yeah. I agree. Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw out, I mean, I know I asked you for a tip, but one thing that I have started doing, sometime in kindergarten, I don't remember, or their kindergarten, not mine, obviously, is that I have tried to find clever ways to overlap teaching with like what research I'm supposed to be doing for my book.
Smart.
Like is there a documentary that we can watch that like applies to something I'm supposed to be reading about right now? And, or even doing this podcast, like some of the books that we've done for younger readers, I'm like, mm-hmm. kids, this is our reading for the next 2 weeks. <you know?
laughs> That's great.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm a big fan of multitasking. All right. Let's talk about your book that's coming out.
Sure.
It is She Who Rides the Storm coming out tomorrow. Would you please tell listeners, what is it about?
Yes. It is a YA fantasy heist. It has four main characters, but the story kind of centers around Anwei, who is a healer who spent most of her life trying to find the man who killed her brother so that she can enact bloody revenge upon him, and has built up this network of contacts and has just spent her whole life trying to find him, and has built up this business of stealing things, going into rich people's houses in the city she's in to try and find traces of him. And just as she has something really difficult happen, some very scary people come into town, she's offered a job that seems kind of like it's too good to be true, like maybe it's a trap, and realizes that the man who's in charge of the place she's supposed to steal something from is actually the man she's been hunting this whole time. And she, plus all of these, the three other characters in it, end up all trying to find or steal actually this sword that's at the bottom of a tomb and kind of step on each other's toes and or fight each other to get to it. And it's really, really fun because I got to go through all of like my fun. I love all things to do with like tombs and archaeology. And it was just so fun to try and put that together. So I love the booby traps and the reliefs and the history, learning through stuff and learning through pictures. And the thing I love most about this book is that you have characters who are all coming together, even when they don't want to try and steal the same thing at odds with one another. So, yeah.
Well, you are totally speaking my language, like tombs, archaeology, buried treasure, booby traps. Like you just listed off four of my all-time favorite things in fiction. So I am so there for it. So let's start by talking about kind of that, the aspect of the tomb and these booby traps and kind of the heist element of these characters all trying to steal this sword buried at the bottom of this tomb. What were some strategies you used to try to concoct this plot? Because I know that heists in general can be really difficult, just to try to figure out the nitty-gritty of how is this going to work? How am I going to challenge the characters and have setbacks and obstacles while they're trying to get this thing? I know it's one of the more difficult plots to kind of navigate. So what were some of your strategies?
Well, I discovered very quickly that people who write heist books are much smarter than I am.
I'm always amazed. How do they do it?
I think what happens is that there are lots of drafts, and maybe some people are amazing and write it all out in one outline in one draft, but I'm not one of them. I think one of the strategies that I had was I wanted to have the characters be challenged based on the things that scare them the most. So I wanted... like the main character Anhwei is really scared of being left alone. And so I really wanted her to be worried about that through this whole thing. So a lot of the tension that comes is from, you know, other characters maybe leaving or like setting up the heist itself. I feel like it's really, really easy to throw a wrench into it because all you have to do is like have the wrong person be there at the wrong time or the wrong thing show up at the wrong time. It's really easy to throw a wrench into it, but it's actually really hard to make it come off okay. So without a reader being able to spot it from way far away. So, I guess the thing I struggled with the most, see, you asked me for strategies on how to write it. I'm like, actually it was really hard and I don't know how I did it.
That's the trouble with asking people craft questions. Nobody, do you know, do you remember, how did you do this?
Well, I mean, for me, the strategy was focusing on one scene at a time. What I really wanted to do in this book, it's not like a super high octane book where everybody is always fighting and everybody's always stealing stuff. It's a slow build where you have characters who are gathering in the crew that they need and then gathering the supplies that they need and then getting access to the thing that they need to get into. So there's lots of little tiny heists that lead up to the big one rather than there being like one big heist that suddenly happens, if that makes sense. So the slow build that helped me to really like set up all the different characters' abilities, because usually with a heist crew, you have, the trope is that you have like the one who blows things up and the one who's the mastermind and the one who does this and the one who does that. I feel like being able to slow build it up really allowed me to showcase what each character could do so that when we got to the end, when they were stealing the thing, it was really easy to like have people fall right into place and to see where things broke if somebody wasn't there. And where things went really well if somebody did their job well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you decide what skills, useful skills, the characters were going to have first and then kind of build the heist around that? Or did you kind of figure out how the heist was going to go down and then be like, okay, well, I need someone who can steal or someone who can be stealthy and I need someone who can blow things up or whatever? Like what order did that work for you?
I started with characters. I always start with characters. Like I would say that this book is extremely character driven because I feel like those skill sets and what characters can do is one of my favorite things to mess with, because as soon as you take that thing they can do away, that's exactly where you start seeing characters grow. Mm-hmm. And so I started with what people could do. And then I built the heist itself around that for sure.
Okay, well, let's go there then, because the characters are so great. And I love this. I don't know if it's, if I'm just noticing it now, or if it really is a trend that has become bigger in the last few years, but this, the heist story with the ensemble cast in a fantasy setting, like we've got Yearbook, it's phenomenal. We've got The Gilded Wolves, Six of Crows. I just love this. So what was the catalyst for you first for deciding that you wanted to have four protagonists and be writing the story from four points of view? And how did you kind of start figuring out how you were going to incorporate these different voices and kind of balance the different storylines?
I think I decided to write a big, huge multi-POV book like this because, I mean, I'd always wanted to write a heist because I love like Mistborn and The Lies of Locke Lamore, and I love the YA ones. I love Six of Crows and The Gilded Wolves, and there are a bunch now, like you mentioned. And I just wanted to capture that feeling of like the ensemble cast, because like, that's one of my favorite things about TV shows. Usually not movies as much, because you don't have enough time with the characters to really latch onto them and their relationships with each other. There's not enough time for you to have like a huge ensemble cast where you care about everybody. And so what I really wanted to write was something big where you could see from everybody's head, like what was happening and how they fit together and like why they love each other and why they hate each other. I love books that are able to do that. And so when I started building this, I came up with Anhwei, the first person you see in this book, the first POV first. I think I had a dream about witches or something. And that's always how it starts with me. I have a weird dream and then I write it down and then I write a book that has nothing to do with the dream. But I started with her. And then as I built it out, like I started writing this book probably like 8 years ago, where I started with just her as a, like a single POV. And I was in the middle. I got a book deal and started writing the Last Star Burning books, right in the middle of that. So I put it aside. And when I came back to it, I was like, this definitely needs another point of view because it's really one note. And then as I was writing, I was like, no, it needs two more because I want to see this other side of the story, because there's definitely two sides to this story. There's like the Anhwei, we're coming at it as a, we're stealing the thing. And then there are the people who are down in the tomb who are discovering what is in the tomb, like as archaeologists, their side of it. And I really wanted to see it from both sides. And so that's where all the different POVs came from.
Was it difficult for you? Cause I remember writing Winter, the last book of the Lunar Chronicles, where suddenly I had like 10 different points of view. And
yay.
Oh, I know.
And did it very well. Like,
I'd be writing along and then realize, oh, we haven't seen Cress in like 80 pages. And then I'd have to go back and figure out like, where can I insert her and how I need to give her, you know, something going on in her storyline that, you know, melds well with what is going on in everyone else's storyline. And it was just difficult sometimes just making sure that you were keeping all of the plots balanced, but also keeping them all moving forward in a way that readers wouldn't be like, yawn, get us back to the action.
Yeah, it's not. I think that 10 characters that are all in different places is a much different beast than four characters who are all kind of like messing each other up all the time. So if you have four characters who are in the same, I actually, with my last book in Dead Moon Rising in the Last Star Burning series, I had that same thing. I only had four characters. I've never tried 10. That is amazing.
Yeah, not and recommended.
Just the idea of it kind of makes my brain hurt.
But I don't know what I was thinking. Somehow it all seemed to work out okay.
You make your bed and then you have to sleep in it with a big series like that. But with that one, every character was in a different place. And so I had to figure out how to do that with those characters. I'm like, how do I make this story feel like it's cohesive when they're not even talking to each other? What do I do here?
Yeah.
So, but with this book, I avoided that entirely by having the characters like constantly like walking into a room right as the other one walks out of it. And like having the tension be like, when are they going to see each other type of stuff? Like the tension between characters works really well because everybody is kind of in the same story at the same time. Mm-hmm. So it's less complicated than doing that big epic sprawling stuff, which is exciting, but does not sound fun.
So one thing I love is that, you know, you've got these four characters and they are all equally motivated to get in this tomb, get the sword, you know, but they've each got totally different reasons for it. And so you're playing with a lot of different motives. What were you thinking as you were developing the characters or developing their backstories or the plot when it came to deciding what their motives would be that would kind of hook them and keep them in this story?
Well, when I was developing it, I wanted to think of the most cross-purpose reasons I possibly could so that there would be character conflict as well as plot conflict. All of them are doing it for very, very different reasons, like you mentioned, and they all have something very, very, they have very high stakes. If they don't get it, like bad things will happen. Mm-hmm. And so, like as I was developing it, I really wanted to have that, like I wanted the readers to be on both teams where they're like, I really want all of these characters to win, but they can't all win. And so how's this going to resolve? How's this going to work? And, I hope I accomplished that. I don't know. We'll have to see. But, yeah, that was the main thing, was just trying to make sure that everybody was at cross purposes with everybody else at mm-hmm. all times.
Did you go into writing the story knowing who was going to win and how it's going to resolve? Cause this is a duology, so I don't know how it's going to resolve yet. But do you feel like you knew early on how it was going to go, or were you kind of discovering as you went?
I am a weird mashup of a discovery writer and a planner. So, when I put this book, when I submitted it to my editor as a proposal, because I didn't write the whole book before submitting it, I submitted an outline for book two that was like half a page long. Mm-hmm. It says, here's how it ends. And I'm not going to tell you any of the things that happened to get us there because I don't know what they are yet, but I know.
And are you sticking to that plan?
Yes. Well, I mean, in general, I know what, I mean, the book is done now, so I know what happens now, but at the time I knew how I wanted the character stuff to resolve. And that was the most important thing. Yeah. So like the heist is really fun and awesome. And it's what causes all the character stuff to happen, but it's the character relationships that matter most to me as a writer. And so that was what went into my outline.
Sure. Well, I'm excited to see where it goes and how it all ends up. In your email, at one point you had said something about how we could talk about the aboutness of a book. Mm-hmm. What on earth does that mean?
The aboutness of a book.
What is the aboutness of a book? I flagged that immediately, was like, I don't know what she's talking about, but we are going to find out.
Awesome. Okay. Well, when I think about the aboutness, I'm using air quotes, of a book, I think like there's usually a plot and a character arc, and then there, or like many character arcs in some cases, many more for other writers of us over there. There, for me at least, needs to be a point to the book that it's saying more than like this character got from point A to point B and managed to steal the sword and is now very happy. And that's the end of the book. Like, I want there to be something that a reader can take away and be like, I learned something here, or I felt something as a result of reading this. And it applies to me as a person, not just to me as a person who's reading a book about murder and stealing stuff, you know? So like the aboutness of a book, I feel like is one of the first things that comes to me as I'm writing, is I want to know what like the characters are going to learn that's going to be meaningful, if that makes sense.
So would you say it's like the theme of the book?
That's probably a more educated way of saying that.
Just want to make sure we're on the same page.
I feel like themes can go, I feel like theme is a little bit of a broader term, but yeah, it probably goes into that camp. Yeah.
So what would you say is the aboutness of She Who Rides the Storm? Like, what were some of the themes that you were like really focusing on and hoping to draw to the surface and maybe leave in the reader's memories?
Well, something that I really wanted to put out there in this book is I feel like YA is it's got a really interesting vibe to it right now, where it feels like there's a lot of books with like characters that are dealing with like a religion or a government that's really terrible or something that's like bigger than them that always turns out to be bad. And then they have to take that thing down. Mm-hmm. And what I really wanted to look at in this was struggling with something that's difficult and finding a place inside of it instead of struggling against something and then destroying it, if that makes sense. Because I feel like especially with religion and in YA, I feel like there's always like the religious leaders. This is not necessarily true. I'm sure there are plenty of YA books that have characters who are religious who manage to continue on forward in that religion and be okay. But it seems like a lot of times when you have a religious reckoning or like a like an internal reckoning, it tends to reflect really badly on whatever like the structures, the governmental structures or the religious structures or whatever else is happening in the book. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to do something where like there's a reckoning, but it turns out okay without destroying everything.
Okay. No, I can see that. It's because I totally know what you're saying, that you know, of course, it's exciting, the bring down the man, overthrow everything, start from scratch. You know, it makes for a great story. But in real life, can't we all just get along?
Well, I think that in real life, a lot of times grappling with questions like that is really difficult because there isn't like a bomb you can go set off and fix everything, right? Mm. I mean, you usually end up having to grapple with like a lifetime of like, this is my family and they're going to be here no matter what. So I have to figure out whether I can exist with them or not with them if you have problems with your family. Sorry, I just randomly came up with that as an example. Or like there are lots of like interpersonal things that are really difficult for people that I feel like get kind of skated over in YA sometimes, which isn't true actually. I'm just lying here. There's plenty of really, really great character dynamics and relationships. Epic
fantasy.
I feel like there's been some really fun epic fantasy, like Trisha Levenseller just wrote a book about like dealing with anxiety, which I love.
Yes, I love that book.
Yeah. And then there've been a lot like that where you're dealing with stuff through a fantasy lens, which actually is really helpful, I think, for people who don't want to deal with a problem directly or they don't want to read something about that directly. They want to see it through another lens. And so I feel like that's becoming more of a thing and I wanted to do that thing. So I did.
And you can, because you're a writer.
There we go.
You're allowed to do it.
Yeah.
I do want to save a minute to talk about your middle grade that is coming out next year. That sounds super cute and fun. I had the title, I lost it. You tell us, tell me about your middle grade.
Sure. It's called A Baker's Guide to Robert Pie. And it's about a baker who, is bored with kneading bread and decides she wants to go find these magical creatures in the old forest who are very dangerous and tricky, but can give you magic and take you on adventures. And when she goes to find one, she finds a bunch of robbers instead who, try to kidnap her. And so it's about her hiding from them and finding magic and deciding whether or not it's a good thing or a bad thing.
That sounds so fun. I can't wait to read it. I'm going to read it with my girls. I've already decided for you. And this is your middle grade debut. Is that correct?
It is.
So what was it like switching from writing in more of a YA voice into middle grade?
Well, it was actually quite a story. I feel like I'm saying that to all of these. I'm like, actually, it was very hard. It was very hard. It was a struggle. When I first wrote this book, it was this weird tween in like I wanted that quirky middle grade voice where everything is a little bit off kilter, silly, lots of sparkly magic and like things don't always go terribly, like you explode something and only sparkles come out of it rather than like buildings falling down. I love that about middle grade because there's lots of fanciful, fairy tale-ish, like bad things happen, but they don't really happen in a really big way. And you can have a funny take on things and you can have a really funny voice. But for some reason, when I was first writing that, I'm like, oh, and there should be a romance in this. And oh, this should be have like a really twisty, intricate plot. And that's not middle grade at all. And I mean, you can deal with twisty, intricate plots in middle grade, but for the most part, stories like that tend to be a little bit more linear. And so it took like years and years of this being my back burner book because I had other stuff on under contract and I was constantly working on that when whenever I had time, I'd come back to this other book and be like, how can I fix this so that it makes sense as a book and not as like weird mind vomit? So it was really difficult for me to like just make it more simple and to make the voice really super consistent and to take out all the things that just didn't make sense for the story where it was. So it was difficult to figure out, but once I did, it's like my favorite thing I've ever written. It was so fun, silly and exciting, and like anything is possible in middle grade. And I love that.
Is it the first of a series or is it a standalone?
It's a standalone. I mean, okay. It's a standalone and it could be a series, I suppose, but right now it's a standalone.
Okay. So are you working on another middle grade or do you plan to continue writing in that age?
Oh, right now I'm finishing all the books that I am supposed to be writing and homeschooling my kids.
I feel like I'm stressing you out with that question. I didn't mean to.
No, you're not. You're fine. I would like to write another middle grade book. I would love to write another one in the series, but we'll see if that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds super fun. And I mean, I have a middle grade published and or under contract, but I've dabbled a little bit in trying to write for younger audiences. And it is surprising how difficult it is to kind of turn off some of those things that you're used to with YA to mm-hmm. now be like, wait, pause, no on the romance, no on the, you know, pages and pages of flower description. Like it's a different way of thinking about story.
Well, and even the development of characters is different. And like the way characters interact with each other is different. It's very different.
Yeah.
Just in general. Yeah.
Yeah. It took fun. I love the genre. I'd love to write in it someday.
Well, I hope you do. It would be awesome to see.
I hope I do too. And then before we go on to our bonus round, I want listeners to know a little bit more about your podcast so they can go listen to it when they are done here. It is the Lit Service Podcast. You had me on as a guest a while back and it was really fun. Why don't you tell people about it?
Sure. I'm glad you had fun. So it is a craft podcast where we spend about 15 minutes talking with publishing professionals. We had Marissa on, obviously. We've had lots of other authors on. And then we also have agents and editors on sometimes. So we usually talk about craft or about publishing or like the business side of publishing. Or like agents will talk about querying or like how you can present yourself. There's lots of stuff for authors to figure out. And then we do first chapter critiques for aspiring authors. When I was first querying, I really, really struggled to know what was wrong with the things that I was submitting. Like when I didn't get responses back to like my query or like people would read my first three chapters and then say, no, thanks. Like that's really disheartening, especially because in publishing, usually people just say no, thanks and nothing else. They don't tell you what was wrong. And so I started this podcast as a way to maybe help people who are kind of floundering through the query trenches to give them ideas about things that might be setting up red flags or things that aren't landing quite the way they think they might be and might be the reason that agents are passing on their pages and hopefully helping people.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is like maybe the number one thing that you personally have taken away from doing the podcast and translated into your own writing?
Oh gosh, I've gotten so much good advice on that podcast. Really, what it really is about is I get to talk to really smart people about how to write better, and it's great all the time. I feel like the thing that I took away that has been the most valuable as far as advice goes is we had Don Juan Song on our podcast a couple of months, I guess it was last year, and they said that authors like to try to use questions to propel their readers forward rather than action. And always, always, always knowing the stakes and knowing what your character wants and what will happen to them if they can't have it, that's what stakes are, is way more compelling than not knowing what's going on. And so as somebody who doesn't like to tell readers things, that's always the thing I have to work on most in my first three chapters-ish. I always end up like just throwing stuff at people instead of like explaining things in a way that makes sense so that the rest of the story moves forward in a way that people can just follow. Mm-hmm. I guess I want to trust readers more than they need Like, maybe I just require too much of people. But taking that advice where I'm like, it's better to have a really great setup and then to move straight into action than it is to try and get people to ask the wrong sorts of questions. The right kinds of questions are like, what will happen next if she doesn't get this? Or what will happen if, rather than what is going on, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know the first chapter, the first couple chapters, I mean, it's such a balancing act of trying to introduce all of the things you're trying to introduce and get your reader, you know, get them settled in, let them know what kind of story they're in and what these characters are all about. But without it being boring, without the big, you know, info dump, and you need to have, you know, action, something needs to be happening immediately. And it's, I mean, I don't know anybody who like nails the first chapter on the first try. You know,
it's always like the last thing I write.
yes. I'm constantly going back and fidgeting with that first chapter and trying to strike that balance. It is asking a lot of usually just a few pages.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's only the truly amazing could probably do that in one go. Actually, I bet nobody does. That's why we have revision. That's why revision is so great.
All right. Are you ready for our happy writer bonus round?
Absolutely.
Awesome. What is your favorite writing snack?
Oh, I don't eat when I write. Okay. I'm always like hiding under something so my kids can't find me. If I brought food, they'd be able to smell me.
Yes, there's food. The kids will come crawling. healer magic or modern medicine?
Oh, I mean, I feel like healer magic is cooler, but modern medicine is probably more effective.
Ocean's 11 or Ocean's 13?
11, definitely 11.
Me too.
Yeah.
Lit service podcast or happy writer podcast?
Well, that's the trick question.
It's totally
I'm here
question.
Right now.
I'm teasing you. You don't have to answer that one. If She Who Rides the Storm had a theme song, what would it be?
It would be, what's the name of that yellow card song? The one, I don't know the names of songs. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. The only one. Is that what it's called? That's what
I
it would
have
be.
No idea.
Well, there you go.
I didn't listen to
Yellow Card when they were cool, when I was in high school, but my husband did. And so now I listen to it. I'm like, oh, there's the theme song. So there you go.
Nice. What is your favorite way to fill the creative well?
I used to run actually, and just being out by myself outside and like moving, was a really helpful creative well filler, but I actually injured myself. This is not a great lightning round. Here's my whole life story. I injured myself and I can't run anymore. So now I walk.
Oh no, I'm sorry. You can't run anymore. I am a recent adoptee of running. I used to hate it, but I've come around and now I really love it.
Oh, that's great.
But I'm so sorry that you can't do it anymore. That sucks.
Oh, that's okay. Walking's nice too.
That's true. Yeah. What is your personal mantra?
That's an interesting question. Mine's probably just to keep going, to do the next thing. Just to do it in small bites. One thing at a time. How many mantras can I come up with before you ask me the next
question? I don't know. Let's work together. They all fit nicely into a general, you know, way of living. What book makes you happy?
My favorite book in the entire world is Ella Enchanted.
That's such a good book.
I love it.
What are you working on next?
Well, right now I'm finishing up She Who Rides the Storm 2. And then after that, I have a Peter Pan adaptation that I'm working on that's sci-fi and very, very fast. I was trying my hand at this book, She Rides the Storm, is like almost 200,000 words. Let's not tell anybody that now that I've already told you that. It's huge.
It's a big book.
It's a very, very big, twisty, four points of view, huge book. And what I wanted to try to do was write a book that was quick. And so this one's like 80,000 words. It's another back burner book that I'm going to go back to and fix up. That's my next project.
Well, sci-fi Peter Pan sounds amazing.
Thanks.
And I just, on top of that, I remember when you sent me the ARC and I opened it and saw how big it was. I was like, oh, come on. But it does not read like a big book. It reads very quickly.
Oh, thanks. That's good.
Lastly, where can people find you?
I'm mostly on Instagram and not many other social media platforms at Kate Sangster. I mean, you can always find me on my website, caitlinsangster.com. And that's it. Yep.
Awesome. Caitlin, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been fun.
Readers, please check out She Who Rides the Storm. It will be in bookstores tomorrow. Of course, we always encourage you to support your local indie bookstore if you can. If you don't have a local indie, you can check out our affiliate store at bookshop.org/shop/Marissa Meyer. Next week, we have a special episode coming up. I will be joining Square Books in hosting the virtual launch event for Kendara Blake's newest horror suspense novel, All These Bodies. That event is happening live tomorrow, if you're listening to this when it airs. Tuesday, September 21st at 6:30 Eastern. And if you want to join us live, you can find the link at squarebooks.com. But if you can't make it to the event, we will be sharing the audio for your listening pleasure in next week's episode. If you're enjoying these conversations, I would love it if you subscribed. And please leave us a review on Google or Apple Podcasts. You can follow us on Instagram at Marissa Meyer Author and at Happy Writer Podcast. And don't forget to go on and share your book spine poetry. Until next time, stay healthy, stay cozy, and whatever life throws at you today, I do hope that now you're feeling a little bit happier.